Welcome to the Midday. I'm Norman Gilliland, and we have guests today in conjunction with the Madison Early Music Festival, which is in progress, started July 7th and goes through the 14th. And we have right here in our studio two of the four members of the celebrated group, Anonymous Four, and they will remain anonymous no longer, at least these two. They're Susan Hellauer and Marcia Janinski. Welcome.
Thank you.
Great to be here.
And also perhaps taking a silent role we'll see is Paul Rowe, who is one of the mainstays of the festival. Speak now.
Hi, Norman. How are you?
Forever hold your peace. Welcome back, Paul. Quite a performer in his own right. In fact, we've given away a number of your Vintariza CDs for Great. Quiz question prizes over the last many moons. Let's see. How many early music festivals does this make now?
13.
13. Mm-hmm. So it's a going concern, pretty well established now.
Yes. Yeah.
And it seems to me, this is a question for anybody, but it seems to me that the definition of early keeps creeping around a little bit. It seems to get broader and broader. Would that be true, do you think, Susan?
Well, I think the term historically informed performance is really what tends to get used a little more now. So that actually opens the boundaries to music of any kind that's not in the current, not currently being written. So looking back and examining the performing situation that might have obtained. And, you know, we can do a lot of research, and we do our homework, but still it's a major amount of guesswork, and sure. We have to remember that our audience is part of the performance, and it's not a scholastic exercise, so there's always a balance we're trying to strike, not just Anonymous Four, but all these groups, between historically informed performance and putting on a show.
Sure, because much of the music that Anonymous Four performs has been discovered or rediscovered in abbeys and monasteries and places like that, I assume, and it would be very difficult to recreate the original performing circumstances, the original audience attitudes and responses.
It is the context that's the most tricky of whether it's sacred music or secular music, the exact context in which it would have been heard. There is research we can do about those situations, but I don't think we can ever really reconstitute our ears to
no,
that extent.
No, it would be impossible. Have you ever performed as Anonymous Four? Have you ever performed in monasteries, nunneries, that kind of place?
Oh, yes. In fact, our first concert in Europe was in Regensburg in a 13th century church, and we were singing 13th century music in a 13th century church for the first time. It was very memorable. And since then, we've done it quite a bit. I think the oldest church we've performed in dates from the 10th century, perhaps.
In the south of France. It was very early.
Is there a certain kind of resonance that goes on when you're performing in other circumstances? Do you have these kind of, flashbacks to earlier times?
Oh, there was one audience member who came up to us after some concert in a medieval cathedral in Europe and said, "The stones remember."
Yikes. So, yes, I guess some people get into it even more than you all do. Well, you've named your ensemble, which is, have been around 25 years, is that right?
Yes,
and
it is.
All four performers are the originals?
Three are.
Yeah,
three?
We had a four.
They were in junior high when they started.
Thank you, Paul.
Pretty clearly, yes. And, well, it's a great name, of course. You know, it can cover a variety of personnel, though, Anonymous Four. It almost sounds like a federal witness protection kind of situation you have going there. But, of course, it's one of the great early music composers.
Actually, treatise writer. So it's a theoretical treatise that also names names of composers and pieces written around 1280, looking back to the golden age of Parisian cathedral music around 1200, 1220. And it's from this treatise, which just got named Anonymous Four, because it was the fourth anonymous treatise collected by a musicologist in the 19th century. Just numbered them. And this is the one that names composers and associates certain pieces with certain composers from that time. Without that, we'd really just be guessing at putting the personalities together with the sounds.
About this, it's not your latest CD, is it, Glory Land? But it's one of your later ones?
It is one of our more recent ones. I think it might be three ago.
That many. What is the theme behind that? Because I gather it's particularly important for early music groups to have some kind of sense of cohesion in a CD.
Well, this one is actually Americana. Some people say that Anonymous 4 has made a left turn and gone into early American music. I myself personally don't really think of what we do as necessarily early American. Some of the tunes that we do when we do American music do date from the early days, from the colonial days and a little after that. But all of the music that we sing when we sing American music is in current active tradition, contrary to the historically informed performance theme. We're actually singing music that is in the now, no matter how old it is, when we sing American music. And Gloryland fits into that schemata.
And so let's just sample here, for example, the first one, I'm on my journey home.
Yes, that is a tune that comes from the shape note tradition. It's currently found in the Sacred Harp, which is a flourishing tune book-based tradition. And it was actually written by a woman.
Shape note. Now, we hear that term occasionally, and what does that mean? What was the purpose of shape notes?
Shape notes were kind of a technological invention, replacing regular note heads on the staff. You'd still put them on the same lines and spaces that you would expect to find them on with regular notation, but as an aid for new sight singers, they would put a different shape for each degree of the scale.
For each degree of the scale.
So the first note in the octave, fa, sol, la, fa, sol, la, mi, fa. And there's a different shape for fa, a different shape for sol, a different shape for la, and a different shape for mi. And those replace the round note heads that you normally see on the staff. So for new sight singers who would go to a singing school and learn how to read music, not owning many books, let alone music books, learn how to read music in a couple of weeks, it was considered to be a tool.
Gosh, why don't they do that now? Or do they?
Well, they still do, but not everywhere.
And how would this song have come to be? What was the context for I'm On My Journey Home?
Well, I'm On My Journey Home is a revival song. It has a hymn text, and then it has a little chorus attached to it. And it would have been published in one of these tune books that contain shape note tunes, and it's still contained in the latest revision of the Sacred Harp, which is really the basis of the main active, flourishing shape note tradition today. And it's a really fun song.
I'm on my journey home from the CD Gloryland, featuring Anonymous 4.
Oh.
On My Journey Home is the first selection on the relatively new CD, Glory Land, featuring Anonymous Four, and maybe you think of them primarily as singing medieval or Renaissance music, but they have, as you say, Marcia, taken a left turn or been accused of taking a left turn into Americana, but it's early music of its own kind.
Yes, in a way, it's got earliness, but it's got contemporariness, as I was saying, in that there's a fabulous layering of the oldest favorite songs, and then the next favorite songs from the next generation, and then the next favorite songs from the next generation, all the way up to today. Composers are still being invited to write in the style. And there's actually an online publication called The Trumpet, and composers can actually submit possible compositions for inclusion. So it's pretty fabulous. And When We Sing from the Sacred Harp, which is a tune book originally published in 1844, which is still enjoying a flourishing tradition in the latest revision from 1991, we sing the notes.
I noticed this.
Or the syllables first, and then the words after that. And that honors the tradition in which this music was taught. It was taught in temporary singing schools, where a singing schoolmaster would come through bearing a pile of tune books for sale, of course,
oh, yes.
And would sell them to his students, who were referred to as scholars, and would teach them how to sing the songs, and then would ride away to the next place.
Oh, it sounds like right out of Legend of Sleepy Hollow or something like that.
Yeah, without the head on the...
Right. Yeah. You get to keep your head.
Yeah.
You know.
And we're going to get to experience some of a singing school, at least a temporary one. Of course, they're all temporary. On Wednesday night at 7 o'clock, we have at the Press House on campus, Jim Page is going to join us and lead us in one of these singing schools with the shape notes and...
Is there an ideal size for the group of people who
I
would sing
shape notes? I think as many as we can.
Really?
The bigger the better.
Yeah.
Really?
Okay.
The bigger the better. Although in the 1920s, some quartets consisting of anywhere from 3 to 10 people recorded into the horn. So there are some small group recordings. But normally, the bigger and the louder, the better. And no training necessary, no vocal training, no reading of music necessary in advance.
So, not even any sensitivity to phrasing or...
Well,
dynamics.
It's a different sensitivity. It's a different aesthetic.
It's a very democratic form of music making. Anyone can play. Before I forget, though, we should mention that the Madison Early Music Festival is taking place, I mentioned through July 14th, but it's all at across the street. Is that right?
Over
at
the Mills Hall. The School of Music.
And you can get tickets to quite a number of events on site there, if you just go up,
Tuesday night is the Rose Ensemble.
That was last night. That's right. The Rose Ensemble is Tuesday night.
The faculty concert is Thursday night. And then Newbury Consort, which is the up to the time of Lincoln, with a banjo player and an actor and one of the pianos from Farley's House of Pianos, the 1870.
Oh, sure. The 1877 Steinway Centennial Grand.
That's right.
With a sound all of its own. And it's on Friday night, the 13th, that is the participation concert, or Friday afternoon.
Friday afternoon is the participant concert. And
Friday the 13th
Saturday
is a coincidence
night.
There that's your participation.
That's right,
day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then on Saturday night is the All Festival concert, which will feature music of several of these traditions, the Moravian tradition, the primary composer is going to be William Billings.
Well, who
Maybe
was
the
a,
most
of course,
famous composer.
The most famous revolutionary war era composer in America.
That's right.
And a very colorful person, too. quite the individual was William Billings. Sometimes, you know, I think of shape note singing as being shouted out.
It is shouted out.
Is it always? I mean, is there not something that would contrast with you know, what we just heard, which is a little bit more projected, that would be a little more soft and lyrical in this tradition?
Well, in the big group sings, the glory of it is to sing loudly, and the person who gets the best benefit is the person who takes their turn in the center to lead.
Oh, you
sit in a
turns.
Hollow square. Everybody gets a turn to lead if you choose to.
Uh-huh.
Or you can stand next to someone who's leading if you're not an experienced leader, and you get to experience the sound of the group. There's no real audience. It's for everybody to participate.
So you don't have to worry too much about getting voted off the island.
Absolutely not.
Well, you have another one here, which looks like it would be contrast to what we just heard, which is called Where Will Never Grow Old?
Yes, that's a gospel song from the early 1900s, and some people will recognize it.
Anonymous 4.
I have been
Well, it certainly sounds American, doesn't it? That song it reminded me a little bit of some Stephen Foster and his quieter cadences and slower, more pensive moments. But it's all coming out of, I assume, the same tradition. And some of that tradition would, of course, included instrumental music. So does Anonymous 4 ever have guest artists, instrumentals, especially for a CD like Glory Land, which
yes.
has an American tradition?
Yes, we had two fabulous instrumentalists with us for this recording. Not every song on the recording obviously has instruments, but there's two fabulous guys, Daryl Anger, who played fiddle and mandolins, and Mike Marshall, who played guitar, mandolin, and mandocello. Which is a really groovy instrument. And they are featured along with us on the song Merrick, which I believe the vocals were arranged by you and me, Susan, for this one.
Could have been.
Well, all right. Back to Anonymous 4 with guest artists and Merrick.
Savior, be-
This is not your father's Anonymous Four. It is the same ensemble, however, with a couple of instrumentalists added, that has performed many CDs worth and many concerts worth of early music in the sense of medieval and Renaissance, a very broad spectrum Anonymous Four performs, and they've been part of the Madison Early Music Festival, which goes through July 14th at the UW-Madison, and you can just you can probably just Google Madison Early Music Festival and find out all about it, how to get tickets, and it's a pretty informal process. Susan Hellauer and Marcia Janinski have been the two members of Anonymous Four with me today. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Wow, it's fascinating stuff. We'll look forward to see where you go next with this. The imagination boggles there. Paul Rowe has been with us also, and he's one of the organizers of the festival.